Well, the Greek god Apollo was said to be the god of divine reason and order, but he started mocking the Greek god of love called Eros. And I thought I'd share a bit of this silly story from the ancient Greeks. And Eros got angry with Apollo, and so he decided to shoot Apollo with a golden arrow to cause him to fall uncontrollably in love with Daphne. And you think, well, why is that a bad thing? And the reason was that he then shot Daphne with another arrow, one of lead, which made Daphne ever or eternally repulsed by Apollo. So Apollo was constantly seeking after Daphne to win her love, but she could never love him back because she was repulsed by him. Indeed, the story continues that Daphne was desperate to get away from Apollo, kept running, trying to escape, but Apollo was a god and she realized she couldn't escape from him. So she asked her father, who was also apparently a river god, though I don't know what that means, but okay, if he could help her and take from her what made her attracted to Apollo. So her father did, by turning her into a tree. Apparently that stopped Apollo's chasing after her, but then he declared that tree to be sacred. And the story of that tree is the laurel tree, which is where we get bay leaves from. And in Turin today, when students graduate, they have a crown of these laurels even today. Am I sharing with you something from Greek mythology to start off with this morning? Well, because actually, these were the gods around the time that James was writing in this passage. They were gods that were capricious. They blew hot and cold, sometimes happy, sometimes angry. They often expressed emotions that didn't sound great or very inspiring. And indeed, it would have been hard for the early Christians to convince the people around them their Jesus was different, because the Greeks and Romans would have said, yeah, our gods have had interactions with humans too. And the Christians said, yeah, we believe God became human, but not like you. And actually, this passage in James is all about them trying to say, look, Jesus is completely different to that. He doesn't blow hot and cold. He's not for us one moment, then angry with us the next. No, he is ever for us. And this is the point really James wants to make. When we suffer, it's not that he's blowing hot and cold with us. He is still good to us despite these sufferings we go to. I've been looking through the book of James at our church here in Italy, and I thought I would share this passage because it's all about suffering. And James has already said some shocking things. In verse 2, he said, consider it pure joy when you suffer. And we noted he didn't say feel pure joy, we're not masochists, but consider there's no other way to interpret suffering that makes sense. You can moan, but you don't feel happier after lots and lots of moaning. He says we need to see the greater purpose. And we come here, and the big question James is facing now is this: if God is in control of everything, then isn't suffering his fault? This is where we join in verses 13 to 14. He says this: when tempted, nobody should say, God is tempting me, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desire he is dragged away and enticed. The difference between trials and testing on the one hand and temptation on the other is these have a good end. God uses these. These have a bad one to make us fall. So, trials that have a good end might be things like a marathon. People run a marathon to check their timings. It's trying to show how good they are. Or an exam. You do an exam and hopefully get good marks to show how well you've studied. That has good ends. Whereas there are bad ends to trip us up that the devil does. And sometimes you can have both. So in Matthew 4, verse 1, one translation would be the Spirit led Jesus out into the desert to be tested by Satan. The Spirit's aim is to lead Jesus out there so that he would show that he wouldn't fail. The devil's aim was to tempt Jesus so that he would fail. It was a test and a temptation by Satan. all you need to remember, test and trials are good, temptation are bad. So what causes us to be tempted? You would think there is an easy answer to that. It would be the devil. But James surprises us. He says, each one is tempted when by his own evil desire, he is dragged away and enticed. He doesn't blame the devil for it, which is strange. But you see, even when the devil tempts, he can have no success with us unless, in some ways, we yield to him. So Ephesians 4:26 says this, do not give the devil a foothold, because unless we do, he can't tempt us. Let me give you an example of this to help you grasp this. When I walk about in the city here in Turin, I've never been tempted to set a car on fire. I don't have particular pyromaniac tendencies, and so I can't be tempted on that because it's just not something that grabs me. But I can have a bit of an addictive personality, and so sometimes I can go down rabbit warrens of thoughts, and the devil there can tempt me because there perhaps I do give him a bit of a foothold. Do you see? So James is just getting at us to see what our own temptations are yielding to, where we are weak. And the word he uses here, he says by his own evil desire. The Greek has two words for desire or emotion in the Bible. One, which is generally positive, thelo, it's a helpful reminder because many emotions are neutral. They're not positive or negative. Love could be positive, but if you love sin, it's negative. Similarly, jealousy could be negative, but if it's towards your spouse, then that could be a positive thing and a right thing. So there's one that could be positive, but this one is negative, and this has an intensity in it. I think about Apollo chasing Daphne in the example at the start. That would be an example here of where it's just got control of us and it's becoming overwhelming. And often, the devil, he can intensify a good desire that makes it out of place. Like lust can become really overwhelming. We can twist a good desire to pervert it. Thomas Aquinas, 12th century theologian, says every sinful behaviour is rooted in a legitimate God-given appetite. Every sinful behaviour is rooted in a legitimate God-given appetite. So accumulating money to provide for your family and bless others is a good aim, but if it becomes an aim in and of itself, or your master, it's bad. Anger can be a right reaction at times if it's expressed appropriately, but if it consumes and then causes you to explode or implode, then it's bad. Do you see? The devil works with either our desires being too intensified or being twisted. And what do these desires lead to? Well, James says, after desire has conceived, in fact, verse 14, he talks about these desires dragging us away and enticing us. That word literally can mean seduce elsewhere in the Bible. Then after it's conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. You may say this seems extreme. How can our desires lead to death? But James is showing us two ways here. This is the negative way if we're controlled by sin. And in verse 4, he talks about the positive way if we face trials and we persevere. So in verse 4, he says, perseverance must finish its work so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Now, I don't know about you, but if you've ever had success in a trial, I wouldn't describe myself as being mature and complete, not lacking in anything. That's where it leads if we're always being successful. And in the same way, verse 15, if we always fail, it's going to lead us down to death. And so often trials can do that to us. Perhaps you know someone who, faced with a trial, has then abandoned their faith and they've said they just can't believe in God because of it. And at the same time, perhaps you know someone who, faced with a trial, has actually drawn surprisingly close to God. So often these trials can push us in one of those two directions, either down towards death, as it mentions here, or towards the Lord. It talks about that as well. Well, evil desire can lead us down. What leads us up to react well? What I think here is faith and not giving up on there being a purpose in trials or in God's goodness to us. We know there can be purpose in things that are hard. Many young people like to go to the gym and suffer and induce pain because they believe there's something good that's coming of that. Children and students go and study hard, and they do it perhaps when they're young because their parents say so, but also because they believe that in studying they might be able to get something better in the future. They suffer because of a long-term vision. Even adults, many of us can have operations, and it's painful and it's hard because we believe it might actually have some bigger good. And I guess the challenge here is that in all of those examples, we can see the purpose for those trials. But here, so often when God allows some of these trials, we can't always see the purpose. And that's the challenge. That's where we need faith. And James is desperate that we don't doubt God's goodness in that. That's exactly why he goes on to verse 16 to 17. Don't be deceived, my dear brothers. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like the shifting shadows. God's heart is good, and he wants to bless us. He's not like a shadow that moves as the sun moves. No, he's reliable. He's like the heavenly lights, the sun that shines by day, the moon and the stars that give us light by night. It's constant. It's ongoing. It's not changing. He's not like those Greek gods that change their opinion depending on their mood. No, he's different. And someone might say, yeah, but maybe that's his character, but I'm rubbish at following him. I fail a lot. I'm ashamed of how I follow him. Well, then how does Jesus react? I think this point is, no, he's the same yesterday, today and forever. Yes, we do fail, but he doesn't give up. Yes, we do throw tantrums, but he is still there. We get frustrated, he's still there. We question him, he is still there. We get tempted and we yield, he is still there. We have mental battles, but he is still there. We grow old and weak, but he is still there. And he is still for us, and we are not alone. How much do we see that ultimately in the fact that God chose to come to this earth in our mess in Jesus to die for us and give us eternal salvation? More, he doesn't just stay with us, he works in us. Verse 12 to 17, or 13 to 17, has been all about what we do in reacting to trials. Verse 18 is what God does. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of fruit, first fruits of all he created. God chose to give us birth. He started this in us. He's with us. And it finishes, so we might be a kind of first fruits. Just as God is changing all creation or make it new one day, so he wants to work in us and make new our reaction to trials and testing, that it might be somewhat different in some way. I remember listening to Lindsay Brown. Lindsay Brown has been the very well-known figure in world evangelism, or world evangelicalism. He headed up the Lausanne Committee for World Evangelization, which meets every 10 to 20 years. There's been, I think, four or five of them. And he was sharing the story of the sad, untimely death of a child, and it was obviously very traumatic for him. And he talked about his dad, and he said he's been talking to his dad about his faith for years, for decades. His dad's not shown any interest. But he said after that funeral, his dad saw how Lindsay reacted, and he came to him. He said, Lindsay, I want to become a Christian. And Lindsay said, what? Like, my child's just died and now you want to become a Christian? Like, what is going on? He said, all these years I've watched you, Lindsay. I've seen how you've reacted, and now I see how you suffer. I know your God is real. Do you know, something was there in that most painful trial that testified to him that there was a life beyond, some kind of first fruits perhaps. I don't pretend that that gives all the answers. I don't think that gives all the answers to Lindsay when his child died, that his dad found Christ in the middle of that. But I do want to emphasize, don't doubt God's goodness to you, even during the pain and the suffering, because He can be good and do things even in those times. Let me pray. Father, thank you that you can bring something beautiful out of such tough situations. And I pray for strength for people who are suffering at the moment, for whom this isn't just a theoretical concept. And Lord, I ask that you would give them just a little bit of relief. I love that. I think it was the Puritans who said, give us a fresh vision of Jesus. And they just looked for a little bit of insight, a little bit of refreshing each time they came to you. And Lord, that's what we want to ask for. Keep refreshing us. Just show us a little something that reminds us of your goodness and your love. And help us when we're weak and we do doubt and we do waver and we do struggle, that we would be able to persevere, keep going, and know your goodness, even in these times of trials. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.